everybody. It's your boy Zach. Today, man, we're joined by a special guest. I got my friend Ella Wanza here, Delaware's own. Ella, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm really happy to be on here and excited to chat with you.
So for the ones who don't know you, you're from Buffalo. Talk to me about growing up there at Buffalo. I know you have another sibling. Talk to me about how you got started in basketball as well.
Yeah, so growing up in Buffalo, I love my hometown. I loved it. My parents still live there. I lived in the same house for my whole life. And although it is cold, I do love it there. Basketball is kind of just like not a huge sport. You know, when you think of like New York teams in basketball, you think of the city, you think of Rochester, Syracuse, Albany. And Buffalo is kind of one that like wasn't always big. So I actually had to play on an AU team that was like 3 hours away and drive to practice and stuff. So a lot of commitment. But obviously now, like, there's a lot of players. You know, you hear about Claire Strack, Amari DeBerry, Shay Shesky, Siobhan Ryan. These are good players that are all out of Buffalo. And like the list can go on. Gretchen Dolan. I mean, the game has really changed and evolved, which is really exciting to see how many players have like came out of Buffalo. And yeah, I have an older sister. Her name's Claire. She played at Niagara University for 3 years. And she, or 4 years, maybe. But anyways, so she played there. And then I also have a bunch of cousins that played. So I have 5 cousins that played college basketball, 4 cousins and my sister. So yeah, I'm the 6th one in my family to play college basketball. So big basketball family, we're all tall. And that's kind of, it was like when I was growing up, like I saw my sister play and I was like, okay, that's what I want to do. And that was it.
Nice. That's good. So talk to me a little bit more just about growing up with your sister, learning, I guess, the game from her, being inspired by her. What was that like coming up?
Yeah, my sister is my best friend, my role model. She's really pretty much everything to me. And like, I think that her setting a blueprint for me on how to work hard, my sister's the hardest working person I've ever met in my life. Like she just, that's who she is. And I kind of wasn't when I was starting. So I think for her, like the way that she pushed herself and was able to play in college and stuff. And she was kind of like, you know, watching her go through the recruiting process and AAU also informed me and my parents. So I think when I went through it, we were a little bit more educated on, you know, how it goes and what things to do and what, you know, what camps are a scam and what are like worth your money. And I think that there's a lot of things that I learned from her. And then even in college basketball, I mean, unfortunately she had to medically retire. She redshirted and she had a lot of knee problems and it was something that they couldn't fix. And so for me, I feel like I kind of get to continue my sister's career and I, you know, I want to finish what she started and I wouldn't be here today without her. So she's always at my games. I mean, she's also a PhD student at Delaware. So we go to the same school now. So it's so much fun and she's the best. She supported me in ways that I can't even put into words.
That's beautiful. You talked a little bit about the recruiting process just now. Take me back to those high school days. What was your recruiting process like? Of course you ended up going to Binghamton, but what other schools were you looking at?
Yeah. So when I was getting recruited, my first offer was, I want to say in 8th grade, I was getting a lot of offers from the MAC, the MAAC, as well as I had offers in the America East, the NEC. And then I was starting to get a little bit higher looks. I had like a couple of A10 looks and a couple other conferences, but for the most part, my offers were all in the MAC or the America East. So I kind of knew that's where I was going to end up because I knew I wanted to play. And so for me, like, I wasn't really want someone that like was trying to like reach for a little bit higher, like whatever my highest offer. I think that's also a tip that I'd want to say if anyone's listening during the recruiting process is like, usually go where the majority of your offers are, because that means that a lot of schools know that you would be a good player in that league. So like if you have 5 offers from one conference and 1 offer from maybe a higher conference, it might just mean that you'll have a more successful career, more time, quicker. And that's not always true, but it's just kind of like, I think how I've seen the process go from friends and myself going through it. So I kind of followed that when I was getting recruited. And then my mom is actually a breast cancer survivor. And so she had finished up some treatments and stuff. And I knew that I wanted to stay closer to home because God forbid anything that I needed to come home for, I wanted to make sure that I was within like a drivable distance that was easy to do so that I could come home and so that she could come visit me and stuff. And that was really something that was a huge aspect in my first commitment. And then the education at Binghamton is amazing. I mean, it's really like top tier. And I think that now being able to say that I have a degree from there is a really big thing for me. So I think that's what the first time around what recruiting was for me. And those are the things that I kind of were really big to me was just playing time, being close to home, and having a good school. And then the second time when I entered the transfer portal, I had like completely different views in the sense of like, it was 3 years. My mom was doing better. I wasn't really worried about needing to be home. So I wanted to kind of explore that. I wanted to do this process completely for me on my own. I said, I was ready to quit basketball. So I kind of threw my name in the portal as just like a last ditch effort to like see if I got anything exciting. But I was pretty much in the process of interviewing for jobs. I had kind of given up basketball. So then when I went in the portal, I said, I'm not going to keep playing unless I feel this like divine, something's leading me there. You know, I was like, everything has to be perfect. And as a kid, I really wanted to study fashion, but I didn't have any offers from schools that had fashion and could offer me a Division I scholarship in the first time around. So that was something that I was like, if I get a scholarship offer from somewhere that has fashion, that is like God telling me that's where I got to go. And then also I knew, after doing the recruiting process too, you're a little bit more informed on college coaches and can kind of feel them out better to see who's being truthful, genuine. You can talk to the players, you know what questions to ask. So when I got a call from Delaware, I already was intrigued because I knew they had fashion. And then I answered the phone to Sarah Jenkins and I was like in shock. She's amazing. I could tell she was genuine. I went on my visit and all the players were like, yep, that's exactly who she is. We like 1 through 15, everybody on the team loved her, adored their time there. I mean, no one transfers out of Delaware because they don't like it. That's just not a thing. It's a really, the culture that they've built is something that I was like, I instantly wanted to be part of. I committed before I even stepped foot on campus. So overall, like, I think my second time around, those were the things that I wanted. I wanted to go somewhere new. I wanted to maybe get out of New York because I'd never been out there. And then I wanted to have fashion and love my coaches, and that's what I did. So yeah, I was really blessed and happy that I came here.
Nice. So take me back, right? We're gonna focus a little bit on your time at Binghamton. Mm-hmm. So your first year had a little injury. Talk me through what happened and what you learned from that.
Yeah. So my freshman year I got to school and I had been feeling good stuff, and then near the end of summer session, I had really bad tendonitis. And as we went through fall training, it just kept getting worse and worse and worse. And it was to the point where like, I would wake up in the middle of the night, my knee would be throbbing. I couldn't really run up and down. It was hard to cut. And so I went to the doctors and I got an MRI and all the stuff. And they're like, no, it's nothing. It's, tendonitis, keep playing. And so I did keep playing. And I was pushing myself, I was doing extra workouts because, you're a freshman, you want to like prove yourself. So I think I pushed my body way too hard as well and didn't kind of do enough recovery. And those are things that you learn once you get through the process. But as a freshman, I was like, all I have to do is grind. I'm going to do extra running, extra this. I never stretched, never did recovery, never paid attention to my body. I didn't eat the best. Like it was not, I take responsibility for a lot of it. But, and then I went to doctors and like I said, they said it was fine. So I kept playing and it's to the point where I couldn't even like sit in a chair without like being in so much pain. And then ultimately I couldn't even run up the court. And so they went back and looked at my scans and stuff. And then they found that there was a break and there was a fracture on my patella tendon, on my patella bone. So I literally had a fractured kneecap that I was playing on for like a month. That was really painful. And then with that, they had to treat it as like just as any break. So I ended up getting a PRP treatment, and then I sat out for like 3 to 4 months. So that was right before that was like one of the last non-conference games. So I was under that 30% under the 30% of the games. So I was able to medically redshirt and get that entire year back.
And then, you come back from injury year two. What was your mindset coming into your sophomore season?
I kind of felt as though it was my, how do I want to describe it? It was like, my first chance again. Like that whole year felt just like nothing to me. And even though it was like a good experience and stuff, but being hurt, it's almost like your mind, like trauma blocks out that year. So I barely even remember it. And I feel like when I started my sophomore season my freshman season, really, I was like, this is my freshman season. That's it. That's how I treated it. I was like, I don't care about last season. That is nothing to me. I had a whole new mindset. I had a different mindset on like my recovery and treating my body, on managing my like load management, things like that, about like, you know, not pushing myself when I really can't push myself, and, you know, things like that. And I think I was just a lot smarter and more informed and very, very excited and just like ready to play, because it was like, I felt like I spent, you know, you finish high school, and I also came from COVID. So like I hadn't played a true basketball game since like junior year. So now I'm, you know, really a second year in college, and I hadn't played a basketball game in like 2 years. I was just so excited to really play and feel good. So I was very excited for that.
So you're a prolific shooter. I've seen it in person. Talk me through that. Like, you see the shot go in. How does that make you feel?
Thank you, by the way. But it feels amazing. I had a really good trainer growing up. His name is Coach Q. He's like the best trainer in Buffalo. Everyone goes to him pretty much. He fixed my shot. Like, he is the one that's like fine-tuned it, wrapped it. Like, he can fix it from just watching me shoot one shot. He's like, this is wrong. Like, he's seen me shoot that many shots that he can truly like pinpoint things. So he is the one that kind of made my shot what it is. And then just, you know, I a lot of reps, and I shoot all the time. And just seeing the ball go through the net. And then in games, just the confidence of like, my teammates and coaches are always like, keep shooting. We know you can shoot, keep shooting, stay confident. I mean, that's the biggest thing. Like, confidence is literally the biggest thing about your shooting, you know, because a lot of the shots I take are objectively bad shots because they might be contested. They might be 3 feet beyond the arc. They might be early in the shot clock. But, you know, at both schools I was at, I kind of was able to get that green light because they had confidence in me. And they knew that I was getting the shots up in the gym and that I was putting the time and had the confidence. And they were like, you know what? We don't want to strip your confidence down. Shoot the shot. If you think you can make it, shoot it. And so I think that that's really a big thing of why it's, you know, I've been able to have the success in the shooting the way that I have.
One thing that I'm interested in that you kind of touched on a little bit there, you talked about, you know, Q being your shooting coach. Mm-hmm. But how does that compare with, you know, your coaches on staff at the university that you're at? How do you kind of balance those two opinions?
Yeah, I mean, I still go back and train with him in the summers. So for the most part, when I'm here, like my coaches at school, they do kind of the same thing. Once again, there's like a little bit of a curve. So like, you have to, once they understand the mechanics of my shot, then they're able to kind of pinpoint it. So like, I would say my first year at Binghamton, it was like, you know, there were certain things like, you know, obvious things, but I feel like after my second and third year, Coach Nick Moore, he was the one who kind of worked with my shot and stuff. And he was able to then be like, okay, this, like he was more, I think it's really just about who's in the gym and seeing those shots. And then, you know, just doing so like my positional coaches, so like here, my coaches, they all can kind of tell my shot because they watch all the time and they'll be like, you know, this is your left elbow was this way, or, you know, your feet weren't completely square, or this wasn't just like, this was maybe not a good pass, or this, all these different reasons. So I feel like that's something that like the coaches, the more they're in the gym with you, the more they're able to like discern if that shot was just like, good miss, or if there was something mechanically wrong.
Okay. Gotcha. But you touched on it a little bit earlier. After year three at Binghamton, or year two, I guess, you ended the transfer portal. What kind of went into that decision? I know you mentioned fashion being one of the reasons why you chose Delaware, but walk me through that decision to enter the transfer portal.
But so for me, once again, grad school was really important. Binghamton just didn't have a grad program that I could see myself pursuing. My undergrad was in graphic design, and there was no, you know, master's in graphic design. There was nowhere to really continue on that path. I would have had to kind of shift and do maybe business, which I really didn't want to do because I hate math. So it was kind of like, you know, there was nothing else really there for me academically. So I was able to graduate early, which was a blessing. And that allowed me to have 2 years of eligibility left, which means that I knew I could complete an entire master's program. So therefore, I really wanted to use that opportunity to complete one that I thought would be either really helpful to my undergrad or something that would just, I was really passionate about. So that was really the biggest thing is, you know, academics are very important to me. They're very important to my family. I really wanted to do something that I loved and I didn't want to, and I also wanted to explore somewhere new. I wanted to get out of New York, maybe somewhere warmer, which Delaware is a little bit warmer. So I'm thankful for that. I'm like an hour and a half from the beach. I'm 45 minutes from Philly. You know, I just wanted to go to a different location too. So yeah, it was definitely a difficult decision, but I think that it was the best decision I could have made because I've gotten to meet so many new people and I just absolutely love my Delaware family here.
Nice. You talked about Coach Sarah Jenkins earlier. What was it that kind of connected you with her to choose Delaware?
I think the biggest thing is she has a huge personality and in the best way possible. Like she is just hilarious to talk to and she's very, like she really relates to us. She played at Georgetown too and she was a really good player there, but she is very relationship oriented and it was something that I joke about, like that was a big thing when I got to Delaware that like I didn't even know how to handle because it was funny because she would call and be like, you haven't stopped by my office to say hi, and I'm like, oh my god, like am I supposed to stop by my head coach's office and like just randomly chat like once a week? And she's like, yeah, I want to talk to you. And like, she wants to know about your life and she'll take us out to get food and stuff. And she just really wants, she cares about us as people primarily. Like that's the first thing. She is going to check on you. If your mental health is not okay, she's going to say, take a day. Don't come in. She's going to be the first one to check on you if something goes wrong. She's the first one to congratulate you if when something goes right. She pushes you. And she'll joke that she's crazy, but she's not crazy. She just says, like, she makes us run a lot, which is true, but she is hard on us. Like, she definitely gets on us when we're not doing what she wants us to do, which is fair. But, like, the difference between that and I think a lot of coaches is that there's so much support that you know everything she's saying is coming from a place of love. If she says, Ella, you cannot dribble for, you know, crap. You need to get in the gym and dribble. It's like, it's not as harsh or it doesn't feel as like attacking or anything as other coaches because it's so supported by hours and hours that she spends building relationships with us. And so that's one thing that I really think is really important. I mean, she's just a really special person and I owe the world to her and the rest of my coaches. I mean, they're all really, I'm very close with all of them. They're like, yeah, stop by my office. I chat with them and it's just really good environment. And they joke with us and stuff. And they just really care about us as people. And I think that like, it's really rare in college basketball to have kind of everything, you know, like being pushed, the skill development, the player, you know, the relationship development, all of those things. And I think they've really done a good job building that culture. And it's something that I'm so proud to be a part of.
Yeah, that's nice. You touched on it a little bit, but from a basketball standpoint, when, you know, summer workouts are starting up, when you get to Delaware, what was that like transitioning on the basketball court?
It's like being a freshman again. It is literally being a freshman again. It's like you take those 3 years of college basketball and throw them out the window because we're going to redo everything. It is like every school, I mean, especially in women's basketball, it's very systemic. Every school has, this is how we run this. This is how we do this. This is how we do ball screen coverages. This is the way our offense works. And it's very, you know, unique to every school. So when I got here, like it was a big learning curve because we also had a lot of injuries. So there was a point where I was playing point guard during summer workouts. I have never played point guard since I was in second grade. I don't love dribbling. I don't like it. I was like, please, I need to get the ball in my hands. This is horrible. So it was definitely a learning curve because, you know, you're put in different spots. And that was, you know, it was just hard because unfortunately, because of the injuries, like I said, we were kind of in a position where, a lot of people were playing out of their spots in the beginning of the season and through the fall and stuff. And so it was a learning curve, not only because, you know, like I said, we're running different ball screen coverages, we're have a different flow of our offense. There's a lot more plays that we run here that I've had to remember. So I was like constantly looking at a playbook and still messing up the plays. So there's definitely adjustments like that, but I think that it, and I'm still learning things, but I think that I have the grasp of it now, you know what I'm saying? I think that like it probably took until the first like maybe conference, I mean non-conference, and then I think by conference play I felt like, okay, I know what I'm doing. Pretty much. So
And you touched on it right there. You're in the CAA now from the America East. Talk to me about like the differences between playing in the America East and playing in the CAA. Probably a pretty deeper conference in the CAA. A lot more probably talented teams. So talk to me about that experience.
I think one of the biggest things that I kind of forget is like the America East is a really small league. We only have like eight. I think they only have eight teams. So now the CAA is like 16. So you don't even play everyone twice. Like their teams we'd only play once. And I thought that was crazy. I was not expecting that. And then just for like, I would say at Delaware, it's just, you know, when you move up conferences, people are bigger, stronger, faster, more skilled. It's like everything is just a little bit, you know, more elite. And so I think that when I, even my team, like when I got here, like I was like, my teammates were just like, you know, taller and they were, it's just different. I would say along the leagues, because it's just like I said, every time you move up, everyone on the team, everyone in the league, everyone in the whatever is, like I said, it's like they're either recruited in there, so therefore they're like already played at a lower level, or they're recruited at a higher level and then come down. It's just like a very big mix. But I think that the talent level was something that I was like, was an adjustment for me. And once again, just like size and stuff. But I think that overall, I really honestly liked playing in a big league, because like it was kind of fun not having to play the same team like three times. Cause I know like at Binghamton, we would play the same team like three, four times. And it was just like, oh my gosh, I feel like I could tell you what they had for breakfast. And like our scout was literally like so specific. So it's fun here. And then it's also, we're moving to the Conference USA next year. Okay. So now I'll get to play. I think Conference USA is, once again, it's a little higher than the CAA. So now it's kind of cool saying that I got to play in three different conferences, and that, you know, I started at a lower level conference and now I get to finish a lot higher, which is really cool. And it'll just be a whole new pool of teams, and it's another big conference. So I think we'll probably be the same schedule where we only play teams maybe once or twice. So, yeah.
So you talked about finding your joy in basketball again. This season being, you know, a pretty good season. You led the conference in 3-point field goal percentage, 38%. So kudos to you. Talk to me about finding that joy again in basketball this year.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is I'm someone that likes new challenges. I like to be pushed. I like to be just have newness. I think that that's something that for me in like competition and stuff. And obviously, like, I'm not saying it wasn't competitive at Binghamton at all. That's not what I'm saying. But like, I think that like, for me, like I wanted to play against new people. I wanted to play with new people. I wanted to have just like something new. And honestly, like, cause I'm kind of very much someone who like stays in my comfort zone. And so I wanted to do something else.
Let's shift to NIL, right? Fueled by Roots. That's something I see a lot on your Instagram. Is that an NIL deal? Talk to me about that, how that came about. And what you like about that?
Okay. So yeah, Fueled by Roots is an NIL deal, that I have, and it's with Roots Natural Kitchen, which is somewhere here in Delaware on Main Street, which is like the kind of the main strip where all the food is. And honestly, NIL is like, the way that I got that one is I literally just DM'd the account. I like found someplace on Main Street that I liked, and I DM'd their social media. And I reached out to them through email and stuff, and was just like, hey, you know, this is my stats. Here's my name. This is my Instagram, TikTok handle. I'd love to partner with you. And then I actually am also the NIL director for SAC, which is kind of cool. So this year at Delaware, I've been able to also gain a lot of experience and knowledge in the NIL space. I've also been able to partake in a lot more NIL deals, which is really cool. And I think it's a really awesome opportunity that, like I said, like us mid-major players get to have, because I think there's this misconception that, you know, you have to be the highest level to have an NIL deal, which is not true. I think obviously there's more money with the more social media following you have, obviously, but there's still a chance for us mid-major players to, you know, find success in NIL. And actually, you know, a great example of that is Emma Utterback from Vermont, from the America East. I mean, she's made a lot of money from it. She's gotten a lot of opportunities from it. And she's just someone that, you know, was a mid-major player who was really talented, and she has, you know, been able to have now a really amazing job at Overtime. So I think that that's something that's like with NIL really just opens up so many doors for players. And it shows that like you can have a basketball can do so many more things for you than you think. And it's really great to see that that's an opportunity that's expanding for female athletes.
That's nice. Can you just expand a little bit more about your role with SAC in the NIL position? What kind of things have you learned being in that position?
Yeah, I think that one of the things I've learned is the worst people can say is no. When you're trying to find an NIL deal, I always tell people, because I do a little bit, like, mostly my role there is facilitating NIL deals for other athletes, kind of distributing them. So if something comes through that I'm like the first line that they, like if a business reaches out, it gets sent to me, and then I kind of look over the deals, see if it's something that's worth doing, and then I was handed out to athletes. I also do like consulting. So like if an athlete is struggling and they want to get into NIL, I'll do like one-on-one meetings. We're doing an NIL workshop soon. Also, one of the big things is like educating, because I think that it's very easy to get taken advantage of in the NIL space. It's very easy to find someone that's like, hey, you know, buy our $70 pair of leggings and we'll give you 5% off of your next 5 orders if you post 17 Instagram stories. It's like, I'm just giving you money and I'm posting on my Instagram for nothing, you know? And so I think it's very easy to get kind of those like not maybe as effective deals. So I think that one of the main things is looking over contracts and making sure the athletes aren't getting taken advantage of, and that they're also reporting them too, which is important because that protects them in case deals, if they're not getting paid, if they're supposed to get $200 and the company never pays them, there's kind of a little bit of protection that can help understand that and protect athletes. And so I think that's been really cool. And I think that I've just learned that there's not a lot of education about it. And so that's one of the main goals for me, is just educating athletes on how and what to do, building your social media brand, understanding what you're going to say yes or no to. You know, there was an instance where I was reached out to by a bar to do an NIL, and I kind of turned that down because I was like, I don't really think that's ethical to promote alcohol as like a college athlete. So I think there's a lot of different things to consider that people don't know, that I think it's very easy to get started in it. You just have to be willing to put yourself out there and, you know, say, hey, I'd love to work with you, and then see what happens from there and not get scared of rejection.
Stand on the NIL topic. How do you think it's changed the landscape of college athletics, specifically, you know, women's basketball at the mid-major level?
Yeah, I think it's changed a lot, because I actually had this discussion with my coaches recently, because one of the issues is right now, as of now, there's 1,100 girls in the portal, which is an insane amount. That's like a couple on every single team and some whole teams. It's a lot of people. And so one of the challenges is that with NIL, these high major schools can offer kids hundreds of thousands of dollars. And these mid-major, those girls would probably be really successful at mid-major schools, and they're getting paid all this money to maybe, you know, sit the bench or whatever at a high-level school. So it's hard for mid-major schools to recruit those types of players and really fill up their rosters with, like, you know, maybe high-level kids, or they have to pick, you know, you pick from a certain pool. And even still, there's people getting, like, people are still passing up mid-major schools because a different mid-major school offered them all this money. And I think the scary part is that there's also a lot of people that are getting promised money and they're never seeing a penny of it. So it's hard to understand, because, you know, when you're maybe you just got out of the portal as a freshman and you're looking for another school, and a coach says, hey, I can give you $25,000. That's a lot of money. That's a new car. That's a check home to help your family. That's literally $25,000 is a lot of money to just hear and have, you know, oh, I'm going to have this in my hands. And then you get to the school and they're like, you never see a penny of it. It's not there. That fell through. Oh, it's not existing. Oh, well, you know, it was never a legal thing that they were going to offer. And I think that people are passing up really good experiences because they hear they might get this amount of money and then they don't even see it. Now, some people are getting that money, which is, you know, great and stuff. But I think that it's difficult, because I know for me, I really wanted a good experience. And even if I was, you know, I wasn't really offered any money when I went in the portal, but if I was, like, that would be really difficult to pass up. Like, if someone did say, hey, I'll give you 30K, like, that's a, you know, so it's just really changed the landscape, because it's like making people, I think, kind of prioritize different things, which is understandable, because that's a lot of money that could really help set people up. But at the same time, you know, if you're not seeing it, or if you choose that and then you're miserable because you picked a school solely based off of money, it's really kind of shifting a lot of things, and it's making the recruiting process hard. And it's also making, for it's making the recruiting process hard for the coaches as well as the players. So I think that there's definitely some pitfalls of it. And I would say that would be one of it, is that it is kind of messing up recruiting, and it's kind of making recruiting kids out of high school obsolete, because why would you spend all this money on a kid not knowing how they're going to be, that might need 2 years of development, when you can get a kid out of the portal that's going to be mature and ready and has experience?
Yeah, that was one thing I was probably going to ask you about too, is the balancing out getting somebody out the transfer portal versus recruiting a high school senior that's coming in, that's going to be a freshman. I think that's a very interesting topic to dive into.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, is that I also think too, with the JUCO rule now, I think it'll make, mm-hmm. Now you can go to JUCO and still get your whole eligibility. So I think a lot of schools are going to say to kids, hey, we don't want you as a 17-year-old. We want you to go there and then we'll recruit you. Mm-hmm. And so I think that we're going to see a lot of that. I think JUCO is kind of going to blow up for that reason. Same as like prep school. I think people started to do prep school. That was something that happened a lot on the men's side. And I think it'll just, JUCO will pick up on the women's side as well. So I think that'll be something that we'll see, and that's like trending.
So last thing on NIL, what would be your dream NIL partnership if you could choose any company to partner with today?
My dream NIL partnership would be definitely with a clothes brand. I would say maybe... this is really hard. I'm thinking of a brand that I really, or food or something. You know what? Maybe it would be like Wingstop. I love Wingstop. I go there way too often and I spend a lot of money there. And if they offer me an NIL deal, I would get my money's worth out of there. So I would say maybe that. But I know, once again, maybe I'm not supposed to be supporting like fat or like, like marketing fast food as a college athlete. But, you have to have balance in your life. So
there you go. What's the go-to Wingstop order, man?
Yeah. Oh, my go-to Wingstop order is garlic parm, boneless wings, extra ranch on the side with fries and a diet coke.
Okay. You talked about a clothing brand possibly being an NIL partnership. What kind of got you into fashion?
I used to watch Project Runway as a kid all the time. That was like my favorite show. And I used to watch it with my mom and my sister. And I think that's what got me into fashion. And then my mom is really stylish. She was a professor for a bunch of years. And now she works in cancer survivorship programming. And she would always have cute outfits. She'd get all dressed up for work. And she was kind of like the cool teacher that like dressed up fun and like had funky, eclectic outfits. And I think that that's something that really stuck out to me, is like my mom would always have fun outfits and I wanted to get involved. And my favorite thing was like, shopping with her. And then I think too, with being in the art world, I think it's like there's a lot of overlap between art and just fashion in general. As well as social media too. I follow a lot of fashion creators and things like that. And I think that I just really wanted to be in fashion. So I think now where I want to be, the space I want to be, is combining fashion and sports. So that's kind of now what I'm navigating and getting into. So I think that that's where my passion for fashion really started, though, was like with my mom.
You also do graphic design, you do a little bit of photography. Talk to me about the arts and the creative side of things. You talked about fashion just now, but just talk to me a little bit more about the graphic design side and what you enjoy about that.
Yeah, I mean, graphic design is really cool because that's, I think, what sold me on art. I loved art in high school. And I think that I was like, well, I wanted to do with sports. Like, I need to keep sports in my life. And I think when I realized that I could do sports graphics and do graphic design in the sports industry, that's what sold me on it. And so I really enjoyed my time at Binghamton doing graphic design and learning typography and all those things and Adobe suites and really just navigating the artsy side of it. And then also my undergrad was very hands-on as well, in the sense of like I did a lot of painting and drawing classes, which I really enjoyed. And I think that it was a really good like balance to basketball, because you go to practice and you're getting yelled at and you're running sprints, you're going hard and you're doing all these things, you're weightlifting, and then it's like you go to art and you're just like calm, like painting. And I think it was just like a nice relief from all the craziness of sports. And so I think it's a really good balance and like mental health piece. I think that art really kept my mental health at a good space. And even now, I think there's just opened so many doors for me and for the world. There's, you know, so many overlaps between sports and art and design in general. And now I'm really excited because I'm going to work on my master's thesis, and I'm going to do it on redesigning swimwear for breast cancer patients and survivors, which is something that obviously is very near and dear to my heart. So I think that me being able to find all these ways to apply it to my life is really important. And I just come from a very artistic family who is always doing projects and building and making stuff and fun colors. And I was just always inspired by my family.
You talked about it just now. You touched on it a little bit about having that balance between sports and having a creative outlet, in your case, with graphic design and art. How important is that for student athletes today?
Yeah, it's everything. I think that when you're a college athlete, your identity is being a college athlete. It's your sport. It's, you know, and that was me my whole life. My whole life was I loved the basketball player. I had nothing else. I didn't want to be known as anything else. I just wanted to do that. And I think that the biggest thing that I learned in college that helped my mental health is finding my identity beyond sports. So I have all these different passions. I have all these different projects that if I have a bad game, obviously I hate losing and I hate having a bad game and I'm going to be sad about it for a little bit. But I think it's helped me kind of get over those negative things better. Or if I'm in a rut and I'm in a shooting slump and I'm just having a bunch of bad practices in a row, I think that that's something that helped me is like finding my identity beyond that. So I can be Ella the designer, Ella the artist, Ella the whatever. I volunteer, coach kids basketball. I volunteer with cancer patients. I work for a nonprofit. I do all these other things. I have a podcast. I think that there's just the more you can make your life versatile and not put so much energy and so much pressure on one thing all the time, I think that it really helps to be able to kind of weather the storms a little bit better. So I think that's something that I learned during college sports. And I think I learned that really when basketball was taken away from me when I was injured, is to lean into all those other things and find other passions to balance your life out.
And you touched on it a couple questions ago. But just talk to me about your course load now. We talked about spring break a little bit earlier, but semester's back in, basketball is running over for a little bit until summer workouts. What are some of your favorite classes right now that you're taking or that you took last semester?
So my course load my first semester was miserable. I did homework nonstop all the time. I thought I was gonna be designing clothes, and instead I was reading research, and I was reading so much. And I was writing literature reviews and doing endless stuff. And that was like a shock for me because I was not prepared for that. And so that was really hard. But then my second semester, so now this semester, has been a lot lighter, and it's been more kind of hands-on based. So the one class I'm taking is wearable product design. And we talk all about, you know, remaking compression shirts for athletes, making pants that will buzz when your legs are in the wrong yoga positions. We talk about, you know, this is where my project comes in, about redesigning swimwear that has maybe removable things and design elements to help make breast cancer patients more comfortable and more, you know, just have higher self-esteem and things. And so there's a lot of different avenues. And I think that that's kind of what I've learned this semester, is like how many ways you can use fashion and the science and how all these things overlap. And especially with sustainability, I mean, that's a big thing right now, especially in my courses, and how can we make things more sustainable? You know, there's research coming out of UD where we're making shoe soles out of mushroom mycelium composite. And that's, you know, is biodegradable and naturally occurring. And, you know, so I think that that's something that's really cool too, is I just think that now that's probably my favorite course. And it's also the professor that teaches it as my advisor for my thesis. So it's been really cool kind of talking to other students as well and see what they're doing.
And just a little bit more on your swimwear project. Is it something just that's like a class project, or is it something that you actually want to like bring to life and, you know, possibly sell and get the name out there for?
So basically it started as a thesis, like idea, whatever. And I wasn't going to do anything with it. I was just going to use it to complete my master's thesis and get my degree. But the more I started thinking about it, and I started talking to my mom and how excited she was about it, and I kind of realized all the things that could come of it, I decided to really like explore how much I could do in the ways and the avenues that I could take with it. So, you know, I've talked to my sister about possibly hoping to publish the research, and I've talked to people to, you know, maybe I should pitch it, maybe I should get a patent for it. So I think it'll be interesting to see where I can go with it. But the goal would be to do it as my freshman project thesis, get it published, and then hopefully get a patent for my design. And then hopefully some sort of company would pick it up and then would start making it. And I would love to have that go directly back to breast cancer survivors and patients.
So we're going to transition a little bit back to basketball. NCAA tournament is going on right now. Have you been keeping up with it? Who do you like to win it all?
So I have been keeping up with it, not as much as I'd like, because I couldn't figure out how to get the channel for a while and I had to find my dad's YouTube TV login. But now that I've been watching, I would personally like to see UConn win it because I love South Carolina. I'm a huge South Carolina fan. I love Dawn Staley. I actually met her once. It was the coolest experience of my life. And I love them. But I think that UConn has had so much adversity, and I would just really love to see them get to do it because they've struggled in the past years. And I think that they have, I really just think that they're a really good group of people that I want to win. And that I think that even though I love South Carolina, they had their championships. They're going to have more. Malaysia Fawiley is literally what, only a sophomore now. Like, she's got time. So I think that overall I would want UConn to win solely based on those reasons. But I mean, it's really exciting to see how competitive everything is. So the games have been really fun to watch, and it's exciting to see how, I mean, how much women's basketball has blown up. So I'm honestly happy for anyone. I know it's a lame answer, but I guess if I had to pick, I'd pick UConn.
Yeah, they're definitely healthy. Good to see Paige healthy. Their whole team pretty much healthy. Sarah Strong's been hooping. So yeah, they're definitely poised to win it all.
Yeah, I think they have the right components now that I think this year can be their year. And I'd like to see, you know, Paige do it for her last year. And yeah. So we'll see. Yeah.
Picking up on that, we talked about it a little bit earlier about how NIL has changed, you know, the recruiting landscape a little bit. But in the tournament, you know, we didn't really see too many upsets. Pretty much the top teams won their games that they were supposed to win. What are your thoughts on that? How can mid-major programs, you know, try to compete on the national stage?
Yeah, I had this talk. I mean, these are all conversations that are really big right now. And I actually had this exact talk with my strength coach today. And we were talking about that. And I was like, it's going to be interesting because I think the thing that I always say is in women's basketball, maybe compared to men's basketball, there's not as much discrepancies between the highest level and of oh my gosh. I mean, the lowest of the high level and the highest of the low level, if that makes sense. Like that little gray area where there's a lot of players that you see that have successful careers at a mid-major school that have really successful careers. And then they do, you know, maybe just as successful, maybe a little bit less successful at a little bit higher level. But there's like that gray area where there's a lot of overlap. But I think that, like, if you think of it that way, that overlap area is huge. And those players are the ones that we're talking about that's like really benefiting from NIL and that are hitting that portal so quickly. And I think that if there was a shift where a mid-major school could get enough money to compete with those high-level schools for those recruits, they would be an amazing team, and they would be able to compete, or if not beat, some of the highest level. But I think that that's the issue, is that there's the money issue. Is like the only way those players are going to choose that mid-major school versus that, you know, maybe having a somewhat successful career at that high-major school, the only way they're going to do that is with that they see a lot of money. So I think that's what it's going to take. And I think it'll be interesting to see if there's someone who will maybe just invest in a lot of that collective money. And, you know, if someone picks one of those mid-major teams and some millionaires, like, I'm going to give a ton of money, get all these amazing players, I bet they would be able to beat the highest level and have really successful. But honestly, basketball, I mean, it's kind of like we say, there's those, it's rare to see those Cinderella teams in women's basketball because of the way everything's structured. But I do think that it's not impossible, and that sometimes people have really good days. And I think if you have a group of people that just do what they're supposed to do and all play into their role, I mean, even without NIL and these big recruits, I think there's a team that can still do it. So we'll see.
What are your thoughts on like the mid-majors getting multi-bids? We saw the Ivy League, we saw the A-10 get multiple bids this year. What are your thoughts on that?
I'm thrilled to see that because I think that they were competitive. I mean, that Richmond made it to the second round. Like there's a lot of that. That's that gray area. Those are those high teams that are going to be able to compete with those other like Power Five conferences and stuff. And so I think that if we continue to give more bids, and I think that, you know, now, like I said, like Richmond is a school where they've now been able to vouch for those higher recruits and those better talent out of the portal because they've been able to have so much success. And I think that continually giving more bids and building the mid-majors and investing in them is only going to make the game more competitive.
Yeah, I agree with you. So wrapping up here, your journey has been inspiring to watch. Like I said, you know, had the injury your first year, came back, one of the best shooters in America East, came back again, one of the best shooters in the CAA. Talk to me about what you would advice you would give to basketball players that maybe either are in the portal or going through the recruiting process coming out of high school about your journey.
I would say the biggest advice is to set what are your values at that time. So once again, your values might be different when you first went to the college basketball to the portal. Those values might be different at high school and in the portal, but figure out what are the most important pieces to you that you know would make your happiness. And I would say go somewhere where it feels genuine and ask the right questions. So like, for example, a question to ask is go to the player on the team, whatever team you're visiting, talking to, say, I want to talk to the player that gets the most minutes on the team, and I want to talk to the player that gets the least amount of minutes on the team. And ask them both the same question and see where the discrepancies are. Because if the people on the team are saying the same things about the coaches, that's usually a good indicator. Now, if you're only talking to, you know, the top three players on the team who play all these minutes and who are leaving the conference and whatever, they might be thrilled, even if maybe there's some issues with the coach. But then you talk to the people that sit at the bench and they say, actually, we get treated like crap. Actually, it's not that, whatever. Actually, this are wrong. But if everyone, like Delaware, everyone's saying the same positive things, no matter who you ask, that's a good indicator that's going to be a good experience. And for me, that's exactly what happened. And everyone here is pretty happy and everyone loves our coaches. Like, you know, people, like I said, people really don't transfer out of Delaware because they don't like it. I mean, that's not a thing. So I think that that's really important, is just ask the right questions, ask for time with the players without the coaches so you can kind of get to know everything, and ask the coaches point blank, you know, how much time am I going to get? And it's easy for them to lie, but say, you know, where do you see me in comparison to the people you have? Say, you know, how much time am I going to get? Okay, well, would you rank me among these players? Where could you see me getting to? You know, ask the right questions. Honestly, I think that's one of the most important things about being in the portal. Yeah, so that's the advice I'd give. And making sure that you have stuff in your life that you like outside of basketball. And finding your identity and always expanding your identity. Never get complacent. Find something new to do and just say yes to opportunities when they come by.
Last question before we get out of here, right? So season wrapped up. Got a little bit of free time. Summer workouts starting. What is one thing that you're going to be working on this off season to get ready for your last season in college basketball?
Oh, the list is endless. I would say my biggest thing is being able to create my own shot. And I think that that's something that I've talked to my coaches about really trying to develop, because it's something that I lacked. Like, I was always developed to be a shooter, and that's great, but it also relies on, you know, kind of waiting for people to get you the ball. And it's hard when I do have the ball, because I'm not always like equipped with enough reps and things to do something else with it. So, you know, I think that next year, something for me that I really want to be able to do is, if I get the ball and I can't immediately shoot, I can still be a threat on offense. So that's something that I want to do, is be able to create my own shot better. So that's a big emphasis for spring training as well as summer session.
Gotcha. Yeah. Thank you for joining me. Where can the people find you at on social media? How can they connect with you?
Yeah, you can follow me at Instagram. My Instagram handle is just ewanzer3, or you can also tune into the Baller Diaries podcast. Find us there, and it's a lot about female athletes and, you know, navigating college sports and advice, and we have guests on and stuff. You can also find me through my TikTok, which is also ewanzer3. And also I have a website called ellawanzer.com, which I have all of my art on. So you can also look at my art through there and send an email through that as well. So that's where you can find me.
Tap in, go shop with her, man. Go get you a graphic design done, get you some artwork done. Thank you for joining me, Ella. It was a pleasure catching up with you, talking with you. Best of luck the rest of the semester and going into summer workouts.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate you having me on, and it was awesome getting to chat with you.